Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 84 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And in this episode, I get a chance to talk to Andy Wang. He's a food writer. You might know him from, most recently, Food & Wine magazine is where he has a lot of his articles, and they're exceptional. And I've been meaning to talk to him for a long time. This interview is more of a chat. We talk about meat specifically and barbecue, too. We talk about his past. He grew up in Texas. He moved to New York. We talk about his time in New York and the meat scene and the barbecue scene while he was there. And then 10 years ago, he moved to Los Angeles. And we talk about the barbecue and meat scene that existed then and how it's changed so much with these pop-ups with Moo's Craft Barbecue and Trudy's Underground Barbecue and how those are slowly transforming into possible brick-and-mortar locations. How there's a lot of chefs that are amazing chefs out here, but they'll have one or two incredible meat dishes which stand out. So we talk about those. We talk about 40 to 50 different restaurants all over the board, even a great place up north of Los Angeles that I don't want to spoil, but it just sounds spectacular. And I know as soon as you hear the interview portion of that, you'll want to go visit them when you're visiting Los Angeles, or if you live in Los Angeles or in the Santa Barbara area. But again, I can't thank Andy enough for taking the time. If you're digging these podcasts, please subscribe. That way you don't miss out on any of them. Also, I think if you are not subscribed, you only get about 20 of those on your different podcast networks. So I'd like you to get, there's over 80 now. So I want to make sure you do get those. I have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kevinsbbqjoints. I also have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com with a ton more content. But enjoy this. Good morning, Andy. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Good morning.
How's your good morning? Thank you so much. How's your day going so far?
Not bad. I went to a very, very late night pumpkin patch in Calabasas last night with a bunch of families and apparently a bunch of celebrity families. And there were pumpkins like carved to like look like Kanye and Kim and Tom Brady and Frank Sinatra. So like it was a kid's party that was really an adult party. So yeah, we're all feeling it a little bit this morning.
I saw that. So that was a private event. That wasn't something people can publicly get.
It's actually opening to the public tonight. So last night they just had a preview for whatever friends and family and media. Oh. So yeah, but it is legitimately you can buy tickets and you can go there, I think, like through November, the first week of November.
Oh wow, cool. Well, I'll ask you for a link later on, and I'll put it in this because I think people would love to go to that. I would love to go. I live in Woodland Hills.
Yeah. So. I mean, it was extremely insane. I mean, the kids were amped, but like the adults were posing for more photos.
And people do love to take photos these days. So
yeah, the second you walked in, they're like, "There's a lot of Instagram opportunities." I'm like, "Oh, you're talking to the grownups, not the children." I get it.
Exactly. That's hilarious. Isn't that funny too? Like I had seen something where someone was at a restaurant and I'd overheard this, and then I saw this also on Twitter where someone said like, "Here are our most Instagrammable items on a menu," and it's just kind of funny how things have shifted and kind of changed.
Yeah, there's something I think in New York that just opened called Pastagram, where legitimately that's the name of the restaurant. So yes.
That's hilarious. Do they have like the melted cheese where they like pour
it? I haven't seen it yet, but I'm sure it's just like every possibility. I mean, rainbow pasta maybe, who knows?
Oh yeah, sure. The more colorful, the better. Well, I wanted to know your background. Are you from Los Angeles?
I'm not from Los Angeles. And I mean, this will be good, you know, segueing into discussion of meat. I spent the first 20 years of my life in Texas. I grew up in a small town in North Texas. I ended up going to school at UT Austin.
I didn't know this. Oh, cool. Awesome.
Yeah, so I grew up like obviously like eating Tex-Mex and barbecue. And so that was my early education into food without me even realizing it. And then, you know, I lived all over America. But, you know, for about 15 years of my life, 15 plus, I was in New York City working as a journalist for different magazines and newspapers. No real linear path to writing about food, but then I started writing about it a lot. And then 5 years ago, I moved to LA, mainly just because a lot of friends from New York can move to LA in search of whatever, an easier life, more space. It's like better weather, every cliche. But you know what? You come here and you realize every cliche is true, and this is why people live here, you know?
There's only a couple things that are not great about Los Angeles. And then, of course, that's the traffic. And yeah. There are some days that are extremely hot, but there's days that are extremely hot everywhere across the country.
Yeah. And, you know, and the one other thing that was weird about LA at first is just like how early people ate and like how early things closed.
True.
But I got used to that because I realized what all my New York friends were saying to me is that you would literally get 20 hours back in your week of time to yourself. Because if you really think about it, the difference between going to dinner at 6 o'clock and going to dinner at 9:30 and then going somewhere after dinner, it's like it in a way is kind of life changing. So I have a lot of friends who moved to LA. They seem busier than ever, but in reality, they have more time. Like you could have never reached them before. And now they'll call you and they're like walking their dog or they're running or they're watching Netflix or whatever.
That's so funny. So the quality of your life is better out here.
Yes.
Interesting. So sadly, this is probably going to be an advertisement for people that want to move here now. So it's going to be even more crowded than it is right now.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know a lot of LA people are like, please don't let anybody else move here. But, you know, it's like there's room here still.
Portland people feel that way. Seattle people feel that way. People in Colorado don't want people from LA coming out there.
Yeah. So. Yeah. But then the flip side of it, it's like whether they want to admit it or not. And I think in most cases they do want to admit it because whatever, like Eater loves Major Domo. People love Adam Perry Lang. LA loves the fact that a lot of these New York people have decided to come here.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, yeah. And they help fuel the restaurant scene. I think it's important that we have people. Because a lot of times people would just only come to Las Vegas. But it seems like more and more they are coming all the way to Los Angeles. And
yeah, and in Las Vegas, you know, in Las Vegas, like, they do cool things. But they're like these big corporate things. And in LA, you know, like David Chang, for example, he opened up a restaurant where the menu is 100% designed for LA. And he hasn't served this stuff before, you know? Mm-hmm.
That's what's really
cool
about it.
Whether you're John George or whoever, you go there and you realize, oh, these are the things that I'm known for. This is what I'm going to do. Or this is Vegas and I'm just going to open a steakhouse. Yeah. You know, and power to them. Those restaurants are great. But in LA, it's sort of like you really get to start over and create some things.
That's
you know?
True. That is true. Las Vegas is kind of like a caricature of the person or what people are expecting to when they come. But Los Angeles, yeah, you can create yourself, and a lot of people do come to Los Angeles from other cities to reinvent themselves personally. So that kind of it makes sense that would happen in the restaurant scene.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, that's one of the sort of the great things about it. And then so I've lived in LA for the last 5 years. I'm mainly writing about food now just because food is the most exciting thing in LA. Like, it's what all the cultural momentum is about.
I agree.
You know, and a little bit for background, like, I used to be the real estate and travel editor at the New York Post, and real estate and travel turned really into food because food and nightlife, because those were the most exciting things. So I've been coming to LA for more than 10 years. And if you think about, say, the year, or think about just literally 10 years ago, right? 2008 was the year that Jelena opened. It's the year that Roy Choi started selling tacos out of his Kogi truck. It's the year that Animal opened. It's the year that Jose Andres, you know, and the SLS Hotel opened on the edge of Beverly Hills. And if you think about the fact, of course, there were great restaurants in LA before that, but think about just those four things I've mentioned.
Wow.
And how many things they've spawned and influenced since then, and how many chefs came out of those kitchens, and how many empires have been built, you know, not even necessarily by the original guys, you know?
That's so interesting. I didn't think about it as 2008, but that is.
Yeah, that transformation, it's like that to me. Like, look, there's been many waves of, you know, this wonderful LA food, but like that to me, like, started this thing that we have now where, you know, every neighborhood in LA like has those two or three good neighborhood restaurants that are influenced by certain things, you know, either directly or just, you know, sort of like indirectly through osmosis or whatever. But yeah, I think I'm here covering food in LA, you know, for Food and Wine and other places, because in the last 10 years, everything has changed. And you've probably noticed this year, the pace of openings is such that like it is impossible to keep up with no matter how hard you try, you know?
And there's still ones on the horizon. And I believe that's one of your recent articles talks about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's new like high profile ones. I mean, Malin, who won Top Chef, is opening Nightshade in like a month. And like in any other year, that may be like the most important restaurant that opens in LA for 6 months. But like, now it's one of 10, and that's kind of great, you know?
It is great. It does feel like it is the best time to be in Los Angeles for food. It does feel that way. And it feels like there's a lot of new things on the horizon, too, that we don't probably even know about that are just kind of percolating. So I'm really excited.
And I feel like LA goes, you know, LA comes out for these things, right? I mean, like, you know, I wrote this piece recently where I mentioned, oh, hey, like the Nomad and Major Domo and Curtis Stone's Mod reopening, that all happened within, I think, 3 days, right? And there's a week where APL and Bevel and Petit Trois in the Valley all happened in the same week. And there was literally a weekend recently, it was the weekend you probably saw this, Dave Grohl was like serving pulled pork in a Valley parking lot. And Palisades Village opened with a great burger place from the Blue Ribbon guys, and Christina Tosti opened Milk Barn. That was astounding to me. So like people were waiting an hour at all of these things in different parts of the city. Like food is what made everybody wake up that day, you know?
And it doesn't feel, and it didn't seem like Los Angeles was a place to wait in line for things. It just, it seems like people have, there's so many things that can grasp people's attention. They're so ADD, like it, but it seems like it's happening now. It seems,
man. Yeah, no, I'm not, you know, necessarily down with all this waiting in line, but at the same time, like, people are waiting in line for valid things. I mean, like Moose Craft Barbecue, which is, you know, is like serving some of the best barbecue in LA, like in the history of LA. Like, they pop up at Smorgasburg and it's like a Franklin barbecue level line.
3 hours.
People are there at like 9:30 in the morning and hasn't even opened. And then you go to the line at noon. How long have you been in this line? Oh, it's been 2 hours and they're still not near the front of the line, you know?
The line was 70 people deep within 10 minutes.
Yeah, think about Howling Rays every single day, basically, you know? Like, if you get there and it's a 30-minute wait, you're super lucky, you know?
Yeah, I always tell people, just check their Twitter. Like, and even if you tweet them, they'll tweet you back within a couple minutes. But it's incredible. People don't realize people will wait for a sandwich for 2 hours, 3 hours in Los Angeles. And it hasn't stopped for Howling Rays at all.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to, and they've even extended their hours, and it's still crazy.
Yeah, no, and I mean, they're going to open a bigger restaurant, and that will probably help them. But, you know, the thing that, you know, too, it's like this has been going on for a while and people just sort of forget it because things happen so quickly. Like, you know, there's been times where, like, there's been parking lots, you know, in parking lots where, like, Kogi served more than 1,000 people in one night and then they just figured it out, you know? That's happened multiple times in the history of Roy Choi in many different neighborhoods, you know?
And do people realize, I believe, like, I feel, and maybe this isn't true, I think he started the food truck movement.
100%.
Okay. Because that's what I always feel, and I always tell people, but then I'd like to talk to someone like you that maybe knows the history a little better, because I feel like it was, you know, obviously it was taco trucks and things like that, but after his, then that boomed, and a lot of them have fallen the wayside, but there still are a lot of food.
Yeah, no, you know, and I was talking to a couple other food writers about this recently, and they were pointing out, and like, this is, again, like, no shade to the other places, you know, like, whatever, you know, there are places like, you know, Howling Rays, obviously, and Squirrel that, like, you know, very much changed the game in LA, but like what Roy Choi did was he essentially changed the way that food was served like all over the country.
All over the country,
you know?
Yeah, I know. And people, I don't know if people realize that. I don't think people from other states realize that,
yeah.
And maybe they will now, but I think it's, and that's fantastic. And then his other restaurants, a lot of people too don't even know that those other restaurants are attached to him.
Yeah, no, and he's going to build, he's in the middle of like creating a huge thing in Las Vegas. Yeah. So like, this, and it's very much inspired by, you know, his Korean roots and Koreatown in LA. So it's like he knows the thing that he wants to do and wants to continue. So he's building it right now.
Exactly. And his Anthony Bourdain episode is one of my favorites, hands
down.
It's so good.
Great.
Yeah. So now, were you eating, like when you were in Texas, were you eating at, I guess it was so long ago, you were like, Franklin hadn't popped up, like the new wave of barbecue hadn't happened.
No, I mean, I've gone back and like eaten at the new wave stuff, yeah. And if I remember correctly, like Cruz was there obviously, like when, you know, like when I was living there, and so I was always eating good meat. But honestly, you know, Cruz and Franklin, like, I think to me, like, are still the standards. But honestly, growing up, like, and living in different parts of Texas, I don't remember the names of most of these places, and probably most of them don't even exist, but there were all-you-can-eat barbecue places, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would just be like, whatever, 8 minutes from your house, and you go there and you pay $7.99. And it's only after I left Texas that I realized, wow, those places were amazing compared to like what's everywhere else, you know?
And then even so, in New York, when you were in New York, were things changing on the meat and barbecue side? Was that, were you
They were changing
that?
A little bit. I mean, like, you know, Adam Perry Lang was, you know, serving chili out of a street cart in Midtown Manhattan that I like very much. He had a barbecue restaurant where, you know, he was doing a lot of pulled pork.
Was that Daisy Mays?
Daisy Mays, yeah. And it was good. But I think Adam will admit that, like, his meat's a lot better now.
Well, it takes time, and he's learned a lot, and he's such a student of the craft, yeah.
And I like Daisy Mays. I mean, like, when I worked at the New York Post, you know, there were multiple dinners where we would go there and basically like do the whole pig thing. And I remember it being like $300 or something. And this was back in the day where you had expense accounts. It's like, all right, whatever, there's 10 people here. We can just expense this.
That's nice.
But the point is, I liked it very much then. And I liked his chili then, but it's just like his food is a lot better now, you know, but you're right. It's just time, you know.
And you said Danny Meyer, he had what, blue?
He had blue smoke.
Yeah.
But I, you know, and the funny thing is, like, Blue Smoke was a good restaurant, but I remember there, you know, like, talking to the Village Voice food critic at the time, Robert Sietsema, who's now at Eater, where, you know, there are multiple people who just basically went in the restaurant and tried to figure out, like, where they smelled smoke, you know? Because, like, in New York, you're just limited by the ways that you could do stuff. So that's another one of those things where Danny Meyer's, you know, the greatest restaurateur in the history of New York.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say that like it's great barbecue compared to what I've eaten before, but it was good barbecue at the time. And then Fete Sal happened in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah, that kind of changed things, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that became a thing where like, okay, this is not Texas-style barbecue either, but this is very close to the experience mm-hmm. that I'm craving, you know?
With the New York bent, I feel like it had that kind of, that backbone. It had like even Asian influences, and it was kind of, had any of the newer ones, was Hill Country open before you moved?
Yeah, Hill Country was there, and I thought Hill Country was pretty good, but obviously, like, Hill Country's, like, getting sausages from Lockhart, so some of it was, like, they took away the degree of difficulty. But, yeah, I thought their brisket and their sides were mm-hmm. good, and then for a while there was some...
was Mighty Quinn's, was that...
Mighty Quinn's was there, you know, and that, you know, and that dinosaur beef rib was good. Yeah, I never made it to hometown. So I guess that happened right as I was leaving, or right after I was leaving.
So when you got to Los Angeles, then, because you, what was here when you got to Los Angeles? Was it just the staples like Bledsoe?
Yeah, I mean, I ate at Bledsoe's like early on, and I liked it, like, you know, both in their original in Compton and
the La Brea one.
Yeah, and on La Brea, and yeah, it was good. That was basically it. It wasn't something. You know, Texas barbecue wasn't something that I really searched for. I mean, it's a funny thing. You know, like, my wife is not from Texas. My wife loves to eat. You know, in many ways, like, she's got a more developed, advanced – she wrote about food long before I did. But she never understood this Texas barbecue thing because it's just like she had never had a good version of it. So the first time that, like, she experienced it – and again, like, and this is why Aaron Franklin is such a god. Like, it was a pop-up at Animal. He obviously cannot simulate, like, whatever – the wind and the weather and all the things that he has in Texas. My wife ate that, took one bite, and was just like, oh, I get it now. This is what you were eating when you grew up. This is really good, and you should want to eat that all the time, you know?
When was this pop-up at Animal? I totally missed this.
This was a couple, maybe 3 years ago. It was Adam Perry Lang, Roy Choi. It was they were doing a collaboration, like, after the Chef movie came out, and I think Roy and John and Vinny were like selling Roy's Cuban sandwiches outside.
Oh, cool.
And it was just this cool thing, you know, where just like Aaron Franklin did beef and Adam Perry Lang did pulled pork and John and Vinny did side. So it was just really like all these things aligning. And again, everything was great. But the thing that it made me realize at the time is, wow, like Aaron Franklin, even under these weird circumstances where, you know, he's not cooking the way that he would normally cook. Like, it's just better than anything that's ever been in L.A. because he just might be the best at this, you know?
And he's not using his offset. Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's just, it's a certain mastery.
I mean, I don't know what he brought to
LA. Yeah, exactly. But he has a mastery already of the craft.
Yeah. But it's sort of like, you know, this guy, you know, from the Bay Area who mainly does pop-ups, you know, in Oakland, Matt Horn. He came to LA for the first time, and it was super impressive because, as other people pointed out, I think you know, Robert Jacob Lerma Instagrammed and pointed this out. It's like Matt showed up to LA. He cooked in a kitchen he'd never used before, you know, with equipment that essentially I think he borrowed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did.
You know what? This is really good. That just means that you got it, you know.
Mm-hmm. And he's great, and he's just killing it up there too. That's
you know, I mean, it's just all these intangibles. You can't explain why it's this good, but it just is.
And isn't it interesting? It just feels like there's some sort of momentum. It's almost getting there in Los Angeles, but it feels like all of a sudden all these pop ups and underground. When did you catch wind to the whole underground scene?
And so the funny thing is, it's like, and these are how these things happen, right? Like, I was playing poker with some friends. One of my friends mentioned that he was friends with this guy, Bert Bachman, and he started like a – and this is a year – more than a year ago, like way more than a year ago. Like, so when Bert was early on this, and he basically texted Bert, you know, like CC'd me on the text and basically said, hey, my friend Andy would like some meat. Can you get him some brisket this weekend? And Bert, like at this point, like he has no idea who I am or whatever. There's no real context. And he's just like, yeah, this is really starting to feel like selling drugs. That's amazing. So I went and got some brisket and I ate it, and then I suddenly like have a moment like, whoa, this guy's doing this in his backyard, and this is like, there's a seriousness of purpose, and the meat is very good, and you know, this could just be like a very interesting hobby, or he could take it somewhere else, and obviously he's taking it somewhere else now, you know? Yeah.
But it was to me, it was super exciting because I had worked in Texas a little ways back for a year, and I fell in love with Texas barbecue, but I really hadn't had much of it out here. And then when I was able to kind of reach out and kind of catches interest via DM. It was a whole exciting, like, you know, like goose chase, trying to find where he was, trying to find out what he was doing, and then I think that part was really exciting, and then finding out that it was quality stuff.
Yeah, no, it's quality. And but you know, like, so that's what's so interesting about what he's doing, you know, for better or worse. It's like it truly was underground. There's this mystique. You didn't understand where this guy came from, and then you started hearing his story, you know, about, like, you know, like what his background is and, you know, where his parents came from and everything. It's just like it's like this amazing, like, Migrant Kitchen type story. But now he's about to, like, open up a restaurant with, you know, this huge nightlife group. And this is the type of thing where, like, you know, again, for better or worse, there are probably going to be pictures of whatever the Kardashians or, like, LeBron eating his barbecue. And it becomes the exact opposite of Trudy's Underground barbecue. But like, whatever, barbecue should be for everybody, you
It should be
know?
for everybody, and it should be, and that's also what makes it difficult with these underground spots, is that I want it more than just on a Saturday or just a day. I want to have it at like 3 or 4 times a week or any.
Yeah, I mean, Moose is obviously thinking about going brick and mortar because the demand's there, you know. It's
Oh,
just a
it's huge.
matter of, like, whether they want to, like, change their lives and do this, because I'm sure other people have told them the restaurant business isn't easy. I mean, it's going to be easier for them because they have this huge built-in audience, you know.
But
But
again,
yeah.
it's a lot of hours, and they have two kids, and it's Michelle and Andrew, they're killing it, but it's also it is a big deal. It's a big change, and a lot of people say, like, hey, open up a restaurant, but it's not just you can't just do it. It's not an
Yeah, no,
easy
and I
thing.
have mad respect for people who, even before they've started, like, start thinking about life work balance, you know, because it's like, look, this is 2018. We don't have to get into all these things right now, but there's a lot of people that are just thinking, you know what? Taking time for myself and just, like, realizing that it doesn't have to be about pleasing everybody else is fine, you know?
We're living in an interesting time, and it's a little bit nuts. So it's to actually have that balance and to look at it and to kind of plan it, put it almost into your business plan is important, which is almost impossible. So what other places are you living? What are you like? What's so as so Trudy's popped up, and then Moo's popped up, and then have you been like, and then Major Domo opened around that same time, like Meat Wise, and then APL, like it's.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, the thing about LA right now is that, like, there's so much good meat because all these chefs, like, communicated and they know how to, you know, and they know where to get things. So, you know, like Flannery Beef, the California Holsteins, like that extremely marbled, like, more mature California beef. That's the ribeye at Major Domo, but that's also, you know, like a tiny steak that you get at Shibumi. And I just got an email, like, whatever, Alexander's Steakhouse in Pasadena,
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
yeah, is using Flannery Beef. And you know, it's not being served at all of these restaurants right now, but, like, in the past, like, whatever, you name it, like Felix, Bestia, whatever, they've all served this beef, you know? Oh, there was that, I just went and ate the 96-ounce, like, smoked prime rib
Where is
at
this?
Bourbon Steak in Glendale. And I mean, that was amazing, and that's Flannery Beef too. So
Okay, I gotta go.
that's kind of the thing. Yeah, it's not even that expensive for 96 ounces. I think it's like $250, and it comes with sides. And look, that feeds six people. So for a steakhouse, that is not expensive, you know?
That is just awesome. I didn't, is
Yeah.
what do you know what Chispaca is using? Do you know what are they?
You know what? I think that they also are using some Flannery beef. Yeah, they had a Flannery beef dinner. I mean, I don't know if they're obviously not just using that because they source lots of different things. But yeah, I think their Bistecca Fiorentina might be Flannery
I
beef. I
think you
mean, we
might be
have,
right. I just it
yeah, we
sounds
should check on
familiar.
that. But I know that they've had a Flannery dinner before that I've been to, so.
And would you recommend? I actually haven't been there. I haven't been to Chispaca. Would you recommend them?
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend Keyspock at like 100%. No, whatever, man. You don't need to
Chispaca.
edit this.
Thank you.
I
I'm
didn't
not
know what
gonna edit.
that.
I'm just
I
correcting.
no no, but I didn't even know what it was called, like, when I first moved here. I think I mispronounced it for the first 6 months or whatever. But yeah, I'd recommend that. But you know, like, even just the places that are just doing their own other thing, doing their things and sourcing themselves, like the bar at Gwen is a very good place to eat a steak, you know?
And they have their own butchery. Like
Yeah,
it's that,
I mean,
that's
Hi-Ho Cheeseburger is using New Zealand is using New Zealand Wagyu, and a lot of people, you know, including me, think that it's like the best cheeseburger in LA right now.
it's so
So,
good in Santa Monica, right? That's
yeah.
over. Other specific places of meat wise that you know are opening up, or is it more just restaurants that you know are opening up?
It's more restaurants that are opening up, but the thing is like they're all like meat centric. Like I went, you know, to the book party last year for Gorilla Tacos, and the thing that Wes was talking about, it's like, look at my al pastor here, you know, inside the kitchen. And it's just like, I feel like that's the thing. Like these, it's the great thing in LA is that, like, unless you're a restaurant like APL, and obviously, like, you've got the dry aging room with whatever, like, 7,000 plus pounds of meat, you don't really need to self-identify as anything besides That's a restaurant true. In LA, you know? But it just turns out that, like, there's great meat in, like, so many of these places right now. So.
And so maybe that's kind of, like, the crux of this, is that it's in Los Angeles, it's not going to be a specific style or specific, even borrowing from a certain region, it's still going to have a lot of other influences, and it might be that they do a bunch of other things, and then their meat is spectacular, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's the thing about LA, it's, like, the people... I think, you know, diners, like, don't really care about, like, whatever boundaries or strict definitions, and the chefs just sort of, like, celebrate that, and the chefs just evolve, you know? So throughout their careers, you know, a chef like Joseph Centeno, who, like, used to, like, do, like, all this really meat-heavy stuff at Lazy Ox, he's evolved where he just, like, really likes to cook vegetables, but at the same time, a guy like that really knows how to make a burger or a katsu sandwich at the same time, you know? So
for tacos, if you're going to get recommendations, because this will hopefully air within a week, what would you recommend if someone coming in town for tacos, where would you tell them to go?
I mean, I'm sure you've had like 20 people tell you this, like everybody in LA, but it's like, yeah, go to Leo's and eat al pastor, you know? Yeah,
it's killer.
It's just such an LA experience, you know, just like watching them, you know, and just like – looking around at like all the people, you know, that are there. I mean, and then obviously like Gorilla Tacos for the quote unquote, like modern spin. I mean, they're crushing it, and then not meat centric at all. But a lot of people, including me, probably think that if we're going to eat one thing over and over again in LA, it might be that shrimp taco at Marisco Jalisco, you know?
That's true. Well, then for burger, you said Hi-Ho. Is there any other burger?
I mean, Hi-Ho is great. I mean, obviously the ERB one is a very good hamburger, but I'm just trying to think. It's like I eat so many good hamburgers that there's a burger at Mr. O's that just opened in Studio City is really good. And again, like Mr. O's, the chef Mario Alberto worked with Joseph at Lazy Ox and has since like opened a lot of important restaurants, including Tallulah's with Jeremy Fox. Of course that guy can cook meat really well. And in fact, you know, maybe like the ultimate meat dish in LA right now is this pork can dish he has, which is a Puerto Rican pork chop with all the fat attached. So it's essentially a porchetta cut.
Oh.
You know, like just with like all these pickled vegetables on top of it. I mean, that thing, you know, and I hate using this word, but I don't even know how to, like this is an epic piece of pork, you know, that's meant for sharing, you know, at this great restaurant that like defies description because, you know, it's a Mexican chef, you know, doing a Puerto Rican dish, but he also has shrimp bolognese and some of the best vegetables and like all this seafood with Asian influences. And, you know, you talk to these people and it's like, it's interesting that like a Mexican guy doing whatever Asian food and Puerto Rican food and all this is like what people think of like as their neighborhood American restaurant. But you talk to the chefs and the owners and they're like, well, there's another word for it. It's not American. It's modern Angelino, right? And I'm that's it, you know?
That is it. So for steak-wise, is there other places? We've touched on a bunch of different places, but say you're going or steak or prime rib, are there any specific like diehard, like old school places that you love to go to?
I mean, I'd still say that like I like the places. I'm just like more partial to the classics that I've just been eating for a long time. So shout out to Peter Luger in New York. You know, RIP Prime Meats in Brooklyn. That for years was my favorite steakhouse. You know, those guys, the Franks, are changing it into something else. I get it, the neighborhood's changing, but it's like I just really have so many memories of like going to Prime Meats at whatever 11:30 on a weeknight and just like being able to like, you know, get a big shareable steak.
You can't do that. Sadly, you can't do that here in Los Angeles. That's so sad.
But that's the thing, right? Like in LA, you know, like I was saying, you know, if I'm ordering steak by myself, you know, I like eating the steak at Shibumi. You know, like if I'm eating large format steak, the steak, and this is fresh in my mind just because I ate it last week. I mean, the Flannery ribeye at Majordomo has like the steak's amazing and it's got these, you know, these perfect French fries with it. So
are there any tips for going there? Is it a long way? Do you go to the bar if you're by yourself or with two people?
Go to the bar by yourself. And here's the thing, right? And David Chang has even said this, you know, like he told me in something that I was writing that he loves the fact that like there are solo diners. Let's go to the bar. You walk in, you sit at the bar and it becomes like this almost paid for type thing where you'll see a guy and he's got a whole fish and he's like sharing it with the strangers next to them. And then everybody starts sharing food and becomes a party that way.
That's killer.
And then, Yeah, and then the other way to go to Majordomo is like, yeah, like, you know, go on Resy, you know, make a reservation. Obviously, you have to make it sometimes like weeks in advance, but sometimes a lot of the time on Resy, you can just like reserve the whole plate short rib, go with whatever, like four more people, and then just go in the one that's inspired by APL.
Feed four, you think?
I mean, it'll feed six to eight. And I always like joke that, like, I mean, every time I go to Majordomo, I literally like see a two top or four top getting it after they've eaten something else, because it just seems like that's a celebratory place. And, you know, people want to try it. And in fact, like the last time I went, I was at a four top with a couple friends who had never gone, and we got the ribeye, and we also got the pork sams. So that's already two large format things. Yeah. You know, things. And literally one of the women at my table keeps looking over at the next table, the short, like, why didn't we get that too?
That's awesome. So you got to make another visit. Yeah. So for APL, can you tell some people about APL? Because a lot of people, it still might not be on their radar.
Yeah, well, I mean, APL is very much, you know, just like a good Minna tavern style brasserie slash steakhouse at night, you know, just with insane dry aged beef. You know, you can get a version of Adam's short rib. That's the version that like people have eaten at like the Jimmy Kimmel pop-ups. And, you know, and now the other cool thing is that at lunch, every once in a while he's doing barbecue pop-ups just like out of his little window. But every day he's selling some kind of hot dog or some kind of, you know, barbecue style sandwich.
Is that the hole in the wall?
Yeah, at the hole in the wall, exactly. So, you know, he's got hot dogs, he's got you know, this crazy $50 steak sandwich, pit cooked steak that you can easily share with somebody else.
You got that like on the first day, I think.
Yeah, but you've also like got these things that you like, you know, you can just go there, spend $10-$15. Eat some really good meat. I mean, take it with you, and that's it. You know.
Yeah, that's perfect. Hollywood area, because they don't have, they have some old school places, but it doesn't. It seems like that area still needs to, like, that specific right by Hollywood and Highland, and that like, and what spreads out around there. It's still, there's still some room to grow in that area, I think, food wise.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't feel like that's there yet, but it'll get there, and that's, and maybe APL is what's going to kind of push it to a different level. I'd hope so. I kind of hope so. So for prime rib, are there any old school places in Los Angeles you go to?
I mean, I've been to Lori's, and it's good, you know. Yeah. And it's like, it's just like that old school service that you sort of.
No, that's my go to for prime rib. It just since I was a child, it's,
yeah.
I get the Laurie Cut Rare or Diamond Jim Brady. it's so damn good. Yeah, no, I just wanted to see if that was something, because a lot of people too might not know about that, and that's super old school, and it feels, and the spinning sauce.
Yeah, it's like the only thing like on that quote unquote restaurant row that I think like endures and continues to be good, right?
Yeah, yeah. There was a Benihana there that would have.
Like, it's like, kind of like the anchor of that, you know, which just means that, you know, for all the stereotypes about how everybody, you know, in LA just like eats kale and drinks iced tea, it's like, no, that restaurant's been there for a long time, and it's the one that thrived, you know.
And it seems like it's always busy, and tour buses come there full of people. It's a big deal. Yeah, yeah. So what about French dip? Do you like French dip?
I do like French dip. I mean, you know, it's funny because, like, you know, Philippe just had their 110th anniversary, and all these food writers were like, you know, tweeting and posting about, like, I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly. So I'm going to say right now, I have no idea how to pronounce this restaurant.
Neither do I.
Restaurant's really good. Just go. You know?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. For hot dog wise, is there a place? Because I just love meat. So I'm just going to go to play. And if you're listening to this or watching this, I'm sure you love meat too. So hot dog wise, is there a place that you go to, like a go-to or a local place? Where are you based? Are you based on the west side?
I live in the Valley. I live in Studio City.
Okay.
I haven't found a great hot dog that I love. Although yesterday I was in like North Hollywood with Wen Tran from Starry Kitchen. And there's a stand called La Vida Loca. It wasn't open yesterday. I'm not sure if it's ever going to be open, honestly. We're not sure. And it literally is just a little stand. And outside it just says Taco Hot Dog. So I'm very interested in.
What, on what street?
It's on Sherman Way.
Oh, like, so it's up there in North Hollywood.
Yeah, in North Hollywood, like near a lot of really, really cool stuff. I mean, honestly, like, I like the APL hot dog, but I haven't found like a classic hot dog that I've really liked. Like, I'm not a big fan of Pink's. I'm not sure.
No, neither am I.
Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, if anybody really actually thinks Pink's is good, so.
Yeah, the people always ask me, like, why do they go? And I said, because there's a line.
So I haven't found a great hot dog in LA, but it's fine. There's great everything else.
Yeah, yeah, you could survive. And you could, if, like, worst comes to worst, you probably could get really good hot dogs shipped out here and cook them yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And then obviously, like, you know, for deli meat, I mean, like, Langer's and Wexler's, like, they need no explanation, you know? Like, old school, new school, it's like they just know what they're doing, you know?
Yeah, hands down, you're always gonna have a great meal. And Wexler's is really doing something special, like across the board. Even their potato salad is this top notch. There's a fantastic food. And then otherwise, are there any other meat places that you can think of that we haven't covered?
So this place isn't in LA, but this is a great drive. It's in the Central Coast, a little past Santa Barbara. It's called the Barren Star. This to me might be the most interesting meat restaurant in America right now. And it's owned by the Fess Parker family. It's a chef who grew up in Texas and, I think was raised by like fifth generation Texans. And it's attached. It's not physically attached, but it's the family also owns a ranch where they're growing all their own California Wagyu. So it's like this entire
I
ecosystem.
didn't know that about that.
And it's just a guy from Texas, so he's like making chili. He's making like cowboy cut steaks. He's just, making deviled eggs. He's making a great burger. He's making meatloaf, but legitimately with this beef that you can only eat in this part of the Central Coast. And if you go there, and you should let me know if you go there. I'm sure they'd love to show you.
Yeah, I'm gonna
They'll
go for
take you to
sure.
the ranch and show you like their mushroom caves and all their
Are you kidding
crazy
me?
like aquaponics and hydroponics and all the fish, and they'll show you where they're just like, foraging for wild watercress. It's just like this amazing family thing. And
That is cool.
because I'm from Texas, the first time I went there, I was just like, I don't understand. This beef doesn't taste like Texas, but all these dishes are made the way that you would want them to be made
Oh,
in
interesting.
Texas. So it's sort of like, like Flannery beef doesn't taste like anything. Like this is a very specific California Wagyu that they're breeding themselves. They've got like this one bull, the stud bull Bubba, who I think is responsible for more than half
That's awesome.
of the cattle. So yeah, you should go see that sometime.
The Baroness, I think I follow them on Instagram, but I never knew their story and knew much about them. And I know a lot of people when they go like the Central Coast, that's Jocko's. That's like their big place that they go to, and it's like a
And the Barren Star, it's like, less than 2 years old, so it's just like it's this new thing. But I feel like it's a very important restaurant because to me, you go up there and it feels like Blue Hill Stone Barns, right?
Wow.
And Blue Hill Stone Barns, though, is a place for really, like fancy, elaborate tasting menus, And this is a place that like has the same type of ecosystem as like, yo, we're gonna do it, but we're gonna serve you acorn pancakes and chorizo and burgers. And I'm just like, all right, I'm down,
I have a wedding this weekend. I like next weekend I'm gonna want to go out there. Oh my gosh. That alone has made this so important because I think that there's a lot of people that don't know about that and a lot of
Yeah,
people come
and I
traveling.
think that like the restaurant's about to get a lot more attention. Discovery just filmed a documentary there. So it's like, yeah, I think it's on the cusp. But yeah, it is important because it's like, look, there's just a lot of things going on in the world right now. And sort of like the easiest way for me to say this is like, so a couple of days ago, I saw a clip from the Barren Star documentary. And it was very inspiring because he's talking about the future of food. Like complete full disclosure, I'm hyping something that I'm in, like as one of the people at this dinner. But he's like serving like, and I don't want to give it away, but he's serving like just all like these odd ingredients, and you're starting to realize, oh, this really could be the future of how people eat. Like literally 10 minutes after I watch that, I click on the Rolling Stone story that went viral just about how if everybody doesn't change everything, there will be no planet in 2050.
Yeah, I saw that.
So it's like nobody's brain has space for all of this right now. And it's not about me or it's not about anybody else, but it's about everybody at the same time. And look, the Barren Star is a small part of what a lot of us hope will be the solution, but at the same time, like the small parts are really important right now.
Oh, without a doubt. That more so than ever. Is there somewhere to stay up like close by there?
Oh yeah, no, they're part of a hotel, so you
Oh,
can
they
stay
are.
there.
Oh, okay, cool.
And they're in Los Olivos, but there's all sorts of other wine country hotels there.
Los
And
Olivos is a
also,
nice little gem area. I like that.
yeah, and then in like 15 minutes you can go to Los Alamos, and there's a restaurant there called Bob's Well Bread, which is an amazing bakery that a lot of people, like it made Eater wrote about it as one of the restaurants that almost made like their essential California list, and people up there like think of it as their tartine.
Oh, wow.
And then a very short walk from Bob's Well Bread is this new place called Bell's, where it's two Per Se alums, you know, like who worked for Thomas Keller, just basically like moved to the Central Coast and just have like their cool like all day cafe slash bistro. So yeah, there's some things to do there if you want to eat. Yeah,
and that's not too far away from here, from Los Angeles.
No, it's like an easy day trip.
And it's also something that'll kind of change the way you feel for at least a couple of days. Like it'll cleanse your soul for.
Yeah, but like when you go, like you really should like you can book a horseback ride or they'll drive you around the ranch and all that. It's like, I mean, that's the whole point of it, you know?
Experience.
Oh, and the other thing that's so rad about like what they're doing is that like, so, you know, this is a family that's in the wine business, that's in the beer business. So all the cattle, and this is one reason it tastes so different. It's finished with a mix of like the grape pomace from the winery and the spent grains from the brewery. Oh. So this is why it tastes very different, like wine country beef, because they're finishing it in a way that nobody, you know, with their own ingredients that like nobody else has. It's pretty rad.
That is really rad. That's really amazing. Oh my gosh. That's right. I could just take like that little clip and use that for something.
Yeah, no. Or like, yeah, you should just like get John Cox, the chef there.
Yeah,
I'll do one of these because he's just a super interesting guy. He's got so many more.
Yeah, I'll reach out after because that's. Oh gosh, and that's what I'm trying to also do with this is not like I'm way into barbecue and way into meat, but also I'm way into chefs and I'm way into how people, especially chefs, are create their world and create like their vision and do what they've done, because I think it's very inspiring for people. That's why I love Chef's Table so much. I think that's a great series.
Yeah.
Because
all these things overlap, right? Oh, and I didn't even tell you this. Like John Cox, these guys at they also have their own smokers at the Baron Star, so they do some barbecue. So you've got every reason to go.
I have a million reasons to go now, yeah. Too. Oh, what else have we missed? Is there anything else in Los Angeles? Or are you going down south at all? Do you ever go to Orange County, San Diego?
I mean, I have gone down there. There's, you know, like I haven't like found, you know, places, you know, that involve meat that like sort of inspire me the same way. I mean, yeah. But at the same time, you know, like whatever, Orange County, if you like look at Brad Johnson's list or whatever, there are obviously like a lot of steakhouses that sort of dominate the conversation there. Mm-hmm. And they have an outpost of bourbon steak there now, but obviously people in LA can just go to the one in Glendale.
Yeah.
But the bourbon steak in Dana Point, like it's a little different. It's got a more elaborate menu. They've like launched like a hot shellfish platter that they don't have at some of the other Michael Mina restaurants. And that is a good day trip too. If you just like want to like, you know, go hang out by the beach, you know?
Mm-hmm. And also too, if people like prime rib, there's Five Crowns, which is an offshoot of Laurie's and like the Tam O'Shanter. There's all the, and I kind of like, even though the Tam O'Shanter is nothing close to Laurie's, it's still kind of a fun place to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then
obviously, like, again, like we're talking about things that aren't necessarily about meat, but really are. I mean, like you can go there during the day and, you know, to Costa Mesa and eat like tacos at Taco Maria and Burritos La Palma is, you know, in Santa Ana, you know, and you can like, whatever, go to Disneyland and then go eat Burritos La Palma, like all very easily in one day. I just recommended that to a chef friend, actually.
That sounds like a great day. Like,
yeah, I mean, it is a great day, you know, and it's funny because it's like there's been discussions about whether burritos are actually tacos or whatever. And it's like, I don't care. They're delicious. But yeah, so if you're going to ask me again, now that I've thought about like what my favorite tacos are, I mean, it's like my son's favorite thing, like in the world to eat, is the bean and cheese of Burritos La Palma. And, you know, and I love the chicharrón at Burritos La Palma, and I mean, that's just a great burrito, small burrito, taco, whatever the hell you want to call it, you know?
I kind of, because I love tacos so much, I forget about how much I do like burritos, and when you have a really good burrito, it's super satisfying.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of little hole, like, in Los Angeles, I went to college in San Diego, so the Mexican scene, the Mexican food scene is different than the Mexican scene in Los Angeles, and it has a whole, its own flavor, but that's like a whole other thing, and it's probably something like if someone that was living in, there's a lot of places that probably have come and gone since I've been in San Diego,
for sure.
But this is awesome, Andy. I'm number one, like selfishly, I just wanted to meet you because I dig your writing.
I'm flattered.
I dig your writing. I love it. I love what you're doing. I like your passion, and I like the places that you kind of highlight, because a lot of times people might not know about them. And I just appreciate all the insight. I think people really dig this, even though kind of like my brain, it's all over the place. But I think it was great. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no. I mean, I like the fact that these things are scattered. I mean, that's sort of like how I think and write. So you know, that's the fun part about being in LA.
Exactly. And that this felt very LA. I think so for sure. Well, have a great day. Have a nice weekend. And thanks.
All right, thanks so much. I'm glad we did this.
I'm so glad too. Thanks so much. Bye.
Okay. Bye.